Welcome to Paper Money, the biweekly podcast covering the business side of the game industry, from squad leader to Star Wars stratego, Avalon Hill to Milton Bradley. I'm Ben Clark, Director of Product Development at Imagic Graphics.
And I'm Rhett Kipp.
Today is March 5th, 2010. I got two S's in on that, the Star Wars stratego. I was very proud of that.
That was very nice. Very nice.
I'm glad you enjoyed that. So we missed a big story last week. I'm gonna apologize to all of our listeners that we missed this story, but it was really insanely busy last week, what with New York Toy Fair and all. So without further ado, let's jump into the news and lead with that story. And the story we missed last week was the World of Warcraft collectible card game was canceled, at least by Upper Deck. Or from Upper Deck. There seems to be some confusion, I think, on who canceled World of Warcraft CCG. Upper Deck says it based its cancellation on the decline in sales and market conditions. However, given what's going on up at Upper Deck, I'm not entirely certain that was their decision to make.
Yeah, I kind of go along with you there, and we'll leave it at that.
Well, 3 months ago, you know, or at least right before Christmas, the market condition for that card game was pretty strong.
Yes, it was. And, you know, maybe the market condition for other companies who aren't always in court over their practices, it's maybe pretty strong.
Right. And like I said, I don't want to keep, you know, digging up that horse and beating it again. But again, Upper Deck having its own problems. So the WoW CCG getting canceled / taken away from them, not entirely surprising. And the other thing that we need to mention before it's over is read an RPG book in public week is this week. It's actually one of 3 weeks this year, but it ends tomorrow. So you need to go out and read an RPG book in public. Here, let me give you some flavor text here. We'll post the links, by the way, that we mentioned here in the show notes. Read an RPG book in public week is an event that happens 3 times a year during the weeks surrounding March 4th, July 27th, and October 1st, starting on the Sunday on or before and ending on the Saturday on or after. During these weeks, role-playing enthusiasts are encouraged to take their favorite RPG rulebooks out with them and read them in public, on the bus, in the coffee shop, at lunch, anywhere, as long as it isn't disruptive to work, school, church, or any other functions. The point is to make the role-playing hobby more visible and to get it out of the basement and into public areas where people can see it. And I'd be remiss if I did not mention that the Purple Pawn is sponsoring a really cool contest on this. You need to go over to thepurplepawn.com and look for their post on Read an RPG in Public. If you post a picture of yourself reading, or I guess someone, reading an RPG book in public, they will, they're offering a set of HDL books, and there's some other real cool stuff they're giving away, including, I think, Aces and Eights. And, again, go over to the Purple Pawn and check that out. I've already posted pictures of my son reading Harn Master in public. So, Yes. Anyways, read an RPG book in public week is this week. I don't think I'm eligible for the contest since we're hosted on thepurplepawn.com. So you have a much better chance of winning because my son reading Harn Master probably not necessarily in the running for that. So on that note, speaking of things that we missed last week, this is one that we couldn't report on. It wasn't out yet. Actually, we didn't really miss it. Playthings is reporting that Toy Fair traffic was up this year. Let me give you the scoop. Overall attendance at the American International Toy Fair grew 4% in 2010. Organizer Toy Industry Association said today, helped by a gain in retail buyers. Total attendance at Toy Fair 2010, including buyers, retailers, trade guests, that would have been me this time, media and exhibiting staff, increased to 25,030. The tally included about 10,600 buyers, a gain of 3% from 2009, and they were from 5,744 distinct organizations, a 2% increase in 2009 from 2009. They came from 85 countries. Now, let's weed all this out and go back to they never really told us how much attendance declined in 2009, but I'll take a 4% growth in 2010 is not a bad thing.
Yeah, anytime there's growth, it's positive, you know, and 3%, 4%, whatever numbers you're trying to throw around here, that's a good growth level. You know, if you continue that every year, that's what we refer to as steady.
Well, we said last show that it really looked like the buyers were back at New York Toy Fair, and this just ratifies that. I'm glad that basically, I'm glad that really the board game industry did pretty well in 2009, all things considered. I'm glad to see the whole of the industry is bouncing back. I think, you know, it's a rising tide floats all boats, as it were.
Correct.
Yeah. So, but you know, we're gonna have Rich Gottlieb on the show next week, and we will mention this later on a little bit, and we'll probably talk to him a little bit more about that. So, on that note, it is. Rhett, what is our topic this week?
Our topic this week is miniatures.
That's right. And so we have a couple of miniatures-related news stories. This one is from theminiaturespage.com. Mantic Games extends free worldwide shipping until March 31st. UK-based miniatures company Mantic Games is offering free worldwide shipping until the end of March. The company has a line of 25 or possibly 32-millimeter elves and undead fantasy minis and supplies. They're gorgeous. They're in the UK. And, again, check them out if you're looking for it. Rhett, do you actually have any Mantic Games stuff? I don't know.
Personally, I don't own any of it, but that's because I'm not really – trying to expand on my fantasy lines, and anybody who knows me knows that I don't do undead. But the undead is a brand new line, so this is, you know, really nice windfall for them. I think they showed really good response with their free worldwide shipping. You know, the store I work at carries Mantic. I'm not really thrilled with their packaging, though. Anybody from Mantic is listening, you know, put the images on the front somewhere so people know what's in the product.
Always, always a good sales tip. Really, put the image on the front of the box. And another story related to miniatures, not quite miniatures, is Fantasy Flight Games announces the Death Watch RPG. The Death Watch core rulebook will release sometime this summer and retail for $60 US. Each member of a Death Watch kill team comes from a different Space Marine chapter with different practices and approaches to worship of the Emperor. There seems to be some excitement about this RPG as hopefully being the Warhammer-based or Warhammer 40K-based RPG that everyone was hoping for with Dark Heresy and Rogue Trader. Rhett?
Yeah, you know, it's the big one. You get to go out there and be a kill team. You get to be the people who, you know, shoot people up.
There's none of that in role playing.
Never.
You're supposed to spend the evening haggling at the market.
Hanging out at the bar.
Yeah, exactly. No. In it's a tavern in RPGs.
Well, I guess it would depend on the time frame you're referring to, because in Shadowrun, it's still a bar.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I forget your attachment to that particular line. But anyway, so Death Watch RPG announced this week. Best of luck to FFG. I really hope that that they go places with that Games Workshop license.
They've done pretty well.
Sorry, that was a joke. That was a joke.
Oh, all right.
So
they still have done really well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good luck, FFG, with that whole game thing. But anyways, and then finally this week, Purple Pawn has a really great post on the history of Ral Partha / Ironwind Metals, where they kind of go through the history of that company in a nutshell. And they also have some really great pictures and a description of the miniatures making process. Really, really neat stuff. If we're going to post the link in the show notes. If you haven't gone over to the site, I encourage you to check it out.
Yeah, and you know, anybody who knows me knows I'm a huge fan of Ironwind Ral Partha.
Not just because they produce the Battletech miniatures.
It's not just because they produce the Battletech miniatures. You know, one of my well-known events was as a very young man in my early teens, having dropped about $200 on Ral Partha miniatures in like 1976. They don't forget things like that.
Wow.
Yeah. I have my little goob hat right now.
Yeah, that's a lot of dough to spend in 1976 on miniatures. So yeah, that's like a pound of lead.
Some of us, well, you know, I probably currently have enough lead in my basement to protect me from any nuclear attack.
Exactly. Yeah, between that and the tuna you're eating for lunch, you know.
That's right.
Yeah.
My mercury levels are good.
Just don't walk by any strong magnets. So, that said, Let's talk sponsorship, because I'd be remiss, by the way, if I didn't mention that this show is sponsored by Imagine Graphics, fine printers, manufacturers of U.S. games, board and card, and also the Purple Pawn. Get your game news there.
Message for you, son.
Well, this week we have some reader mail. Thank you, all of you out there listening. Now, this comes from our show guide post on bgdf.com by Slam, possibly of Paradise Games.
So, Slam, if you're out there listening, we think you're from Paradise Games based on your avatar, but we weren't sure. So, but again, thank you for posting, and now I'll turn it back over to Rhett.
I've been listening to the Paper Money podcast, which is a podcast about the board game business. It's good to listen to you, but I couldn't say that it's been particularly helpful to me as a self-publisher, as it seems to focus more on the bigger manufacturers. However, the recent show about trade show can convey lots of essential information about the whole year's calendar worth of board game trade shows and which ones you should consider attending if you're a designer, a publisher, a buyer, or whatever. Everyone should listen to it, no matter what your particular situation is.
See, we should have just trimmed that down to everyone should listen to it.
Yeah, you know, I really appreciate that. Thank you very much out there, Slam.
Yeah.
I like the fact that you mentioned that we may not actually be addressing your needs. I have some ideas that Ben and I will be talking about later on in future shows that may, you know, specifically help you there.
Exactly. Well, you know, I responded to his post over at bgdf.com. By the way, that's the Board Game Designers Forum is what that's for. I told him, I said, you know, part of it is that the small companies don't generate as much news. Right. You know, so it's sometimes hard to do a small press or a self-publisher show, or even a show on you know, game design. And so consequently, we haven't necessarily been focused on that. But like we're doing this week with the miniature show, we're going to be doing a lot more topical shows this year. And I think we're definitely going to delve into some of that, the self-publishing, the game design, the one-man armies that are out there. We're going to give you some good information this year.
The goal is, as always, to try to help you make money in this industry.
Did you laugh after you said that?
I didn't. I didn't really laugh after that.
Okay. All right.
I did not laugh.
And, Rhett, how can they get a hold of us if they would like to also send us some reader mail?
You can email us at papermoney@purplepawn.com. You can Skype us at Paper Money Podcast, or you can phone us at 773-634-9377. That so needs a jingle.
I'll talk to the Empire Carpet guy. So, or maybe you should. You're in the Chicago area.
I'm in the Chicago area. And you know what? I, like most people here, am heavily programmed to that silly phone number.
That's right. So, speaking of marketing and jingles, we wanted to talk this week about the miniatures market. Now, we are going to try and get someone on from Privateer, one of the other companies, and due to a series of delayed or missent emails, we apologize. We're going to be talking amongst ourselves about the minis market, which is fine because, as Rhett pointed out, he's been buying $200 worth of miniatures since 1976. Just a little familiarity with the market, Rhett, you think?
A little bit.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Good. Okay.
My house is, you know, got extra supports to keep it stable.
That's right. That's right. So, well, one of the things that we really wanted to talk about is with the minis market is the business side of it. It's a small segment. It's a niche market. A lot of times it's misunderstood by the folks who don't carry the product or who don't play the games. So let's talk about it. There's three really main segments to this, and there's the fantasy science fiction segment, there's a historical segment, and then we also have more recently the collectible and pre-painted part of the market. And Rhett, what would you say is the health of the relative three segments of the miniatures market?
Well, the fantasy sci-fi segment still seems to be the healthiest one of all. There's lots and lots of manufacturers involved in this. The biggest one in the world, Games Workshop, is obviously involved in this. And it is still probably, of the miniatures lines, the standard bread and butter. Mm-hmm. The historicals, you know, has some very strong growth areas. Flames of War, you know, made some wonderful penetration out there. A number of other small companies, and you talk about small press, historical miniatures games is virtually all small press.
But other than, say, Warhammer Ancients and Flames of War, it's what your biggest company out there is probably Micro Armor or something.
Depends on if we're talking manufacturers or if we're talking rules,
gotcha.
You know, designers, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there's plenty of people who are publishing continuously with new rule sets across the spectrum. But again, they're all small press. You know, their runs are probably under 2,000, 3,000 pieces.
Okay.
But they continue to make a living at it, you know. So apparently there is enough of a clientele that that's done okay. And as I say, historicals, it's been around forever. It's where it's where miniatures started.
Well, it's where almost the whole hobby started. I mean, that's...
If we credit the hobby to being either H.G. Wells or to the people in the U.K. who grew us up, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then Avalon Hill came in with board games, and then finally, you know, TSR and Dungeons & Dragons.
Right. It's... So, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off too much.
We're going to get into collectibles.
That's right. Now, we've been talking about a little bit about the demise of the collectible market, but in terms of miniatures, the pre-painted stuff I think it's still selling well.
It's hit and miss. You know, there are some companies that are doing pretty well with the pre-painted and, again, with the collectible items. Dungeons & Dragons product continues to do very well. Wizards is going to revamp their product line again so that they condense it. But basically, they want to go back to the fully collectible end of it as opposed to their current packaging end of it. But I expect that it'll continue to do really well for them. Star Wars will be off the market, so it's going to be a hard call on that one until someone enters that one again. On the rest of it, Reaper is probably the only one who's doing pre-painted, non-collectible, who seems to be doing fairly well with that. I say that simply because they expand their lines slowly. We see a few releases every year.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, but their bread and butter, again, is in their monthly regular metal releases as opposed to their pre-paint releases.
Gotcha. So, well, let's then break this down. As we kind of did with the show guide, let's talk about retailers, designers, and manufacturers on things to consider for the minis market. Retailers, I think, is... what should they carry? Now, someone with a, you know, marginal, I have a pretty good familiarity with miniatures, but I'm going to guess as a retailer, you're going to start with Games Workshop.
Absolutely. I mean, if you pretty much can't sell Games Workshop, you're going to have a hard time selling anything. It's the most played games in the miniatures area. They have, you know, a fantastic level of production and marketing out there for their products. They are referring to themselves constantly as the hobby. And, you know, they're bigger than the next biggest kid by a quantum amount.
Exactly. So who is the... Now, if you're a retailer and you're selling Games Workshop, what's the next line you go into? Is it Flames of War or is it War Machine or what do you think?
I think you have to determine what your clientele is. If you have a very large... consumer base in role-playing games, Privateer certainly isn't a bad choice because of the role-playing ties there. But frankly, I would say that, you know, even someone like Reaper, if you're doing well with Battletech, Iron Wind. But if, you know, if you're dabbling, you know, the safer areas, I would say, are probably Privateer. The War Machine Hordes lines do very well. Mm-hmm. They've just reintroduced, you know, the new edition of the game. And so they're creating a new market again over that, which is nice, which means that there's a lot of advertising going on for using this right now as a jumping point.
Mm-hmm.
Flames of War, a very strong company again. If you're looking to go into historicals or miniatures in general, and they've been fairly good in the last few years about changing their products so that box sets, which make it a lot easier for new retailers to carry limited amounts of product and have the right things, an all-complete type of product.
Well, that was actually my next question was how, you know, miniatures are, they're SKU intensive, right? You have to, you know, there's what's that?
enormously.
Exactly. And they're fairly space intensive. So the question is, how deep do you have to carry these? Normally on retail, the game mantra has always been stock broad, not deep. And but how broad do you need to get with these lines? I mean, if you were to buy one of everything in the Games Workshop inventory, you'd spend $25,000 on product.
I'm guessing it's probably between half of that and that. It is a huge amount of product that Games Workshop produces. And they've been at this for over 30 years. There's a reason for why they have such a broad market on that. Mm-hmm. It's a complete line. You've got books, you've got tools, you've got accessories, paints, and then the miniatures themselves. So they are a very complete company, which is one of their advantages. Privateer has taken that same step. Privateer, you can get pretty much everything. Flames of War, which is Battlefront. They've done the same thing. You can get paint sets from them. You can get tools from them. Accessories for the games. All of these make those lines a little bit easier to carry, simply because if you don't already carry parts of that, it's nice to have a miniature, but a miniature also needs a paint sale. Every add-on sale is a wonderful thing at a retail level.
So is it possible to test the waters, right? I mean, do you bring in a...
Still a big commitment.
Yeah.
Even to go into more, let's say, condensed lines, using BattleTech, not that I would recommend BattleTech as your starting point for this, but, if you go in with BattleTech, you still have a number of books that you may or may not already be carrying, and BattleTech is one of those great crossovers between a board game, doesn't need much outside of what it comes in its basic components, and its miniature line, of which Iron Wind produces perhaps somewhere between 400 and 1,000 SKUs if you were to bring in the entire BattleTech line.
As someone who plays BattleTech, retailers do not bring in 1,000 BattleTech SKUs right off the
bat. No, except for the store I work at, where we have virtually anything you would want in any line.
And invariably the one I want is sold out.
I
don't know why that works that way.
I it's because you like popular.
Well, okay, all right. Well, I guess I'm okay with that then.
Yeah, I was going to say, like with the rest of the game lines, it's pretty much, there are easy steps to take. It's, there are some basic SKUs. Most of the manufacturers, if you contact them directly, would be happy to help you along on what you can start with.
So let's move on to talking about designers and potential manufacturers in this market. Now, designers... If you've got a guy who played Battle Lore and loved it and is moving on, has maybe designed some stuff before, really, I think the main thing to consider in this is you're going to have to self-publish.
Pretty much. I mean, and people have done fairly well with that.
Was the other thing I was going to say, right? As you said, it's a small press market for miniatures games.
Right. And, it is finding your clientele. In that case, if you're into most of this, the answer is it's probably a show intensive game entry point. You're going to have to make the show rounds, to build enough of a marketplace to get your name established so that the retailers will come and pick you up.
Correct. Yeah. You're going to be selling these one at a time. Is the best way. You're not going to be able to get this in Barnes & Noble, basically. Well, the other thing I think that's important to consider here, too, is the production cost is actually fairly low, because with miniatures, you're basically making a saddle stitch book. It's probably going to be, maybe a perfect bound book. They're generally not in color for the miniatures market. Or if they are, it's, it's a color cover with a black and white interior. So your production cost is actually fairly low.
Actually, that's really changing. Almost everybody who's making any inroads into it, you do have, some high gloss, slick looking product.
Okay. All right. Okay. So you're still going to print in four color, but you're just printing, you're printing a book.
You're printing a book, and, it can be something as simple as a signature. Yeah, it's something as simple as a signature, a color inside of it will suffice. You can be primarily a black and white book. Other than that, you know, a textbook, diagrams, et cetera, because you are a little bit more intense in graphics to explain how the game works.
Right, right. And, you know, obviously you're probably not going to get away with the old Angrief or, say, DBM style rules, you know, which are, I think, were basically written on a typewriter. But yeah, the production cost compared to producing a board game or a card game, your production costs are going to be fairly low.
You know, and I kind of find that humorous because simply, you know, I look at the DBM rules, which were simplicity at all levels, mechanically and everything else, and made the big revolution in the historical industry 15 years ago. You know, that was just, but again, the production quality was poor, but what they did was the right answer.
Right, and it was a small enough market that they could make big waves. By the way, DBM stands for?
It's actually DBA is the jump-off point. Debellius Antiquitas.
It covers what, ancients through medieval?
Ancient battles of the, yes. So from the beginning of time when man first had organized warfare through the end of the Middle Ages.
Okay, and then DBM would be the fantasy one, right?
DBM is the big battle version of that.
Okay. Okay.
Hordes of the Things.
Hordes of the Things was the fantasy versions. Okay. So, but again, a small product that was not initially very professionally produced made a big splash in the market and is really one of the more popular alternate rule systems after, say, you know, after you, you know, if you're tired of Games Workshop and you're looking for something else or you're looking for something historical, it's a great rule set. Now that said, manufacturers. Right. Say you're going to produce in the market, plastic or metal?
That's an economics question. Metal is certainly a lot easier to do. The sculpting ends of it are typically less expensive. The casting ends of it are enormously less expensive. The nice thing about this is that you don't actually have to have production facilities yourself. There's a number of manufacturers out there who would be happy to partner and do your casting for you. You know, you'd have to go out there and get all your molds and everything else done. But they're really good about that kind of things.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it looks like after reading the article on Iron Wind Metals on the purplepawn.com, which I've already pimped once, you're going to want to – this is not something you're going to do in your basement.
No,
you really should find a contract with someone like Iron Wind or Reaper who's got the facilities if you're doing metal, and do that. Now the plastic, a lot of the industry seems to be going to plastic, but the part of the industry that's going to plastic is the volume part.
Well, you know, Games Workshop has continued to expand on their plastics. Actually, Privateer has just gone into the plastics end with their larger scale figures to keep those costs down. Manic Games is a new player on the market who's into the fantasy line, and their whole concept is behind plastic. And there's now at least a half a dozen historical companies. And I mean, if you can do a historical company in plastic, it's pretty easy to, if you hook up with the right people there, to get into the plastics market, I suspect. Again, I'm sure it's, you know, if you look at the cost differences, producing in metal is going to be less expensive. The big thing about that, and the reason I say partnership is very handy, is most people know how to write to a certain extent. You can get an editor to correct most of that. It's also not dangerous to type in your house. when you're dealing with making miniatures, that's an actual literal manufacturing technique. There's a lot of science involved in it, and it's not something you can do casually. I mean, people know that there's home casting, but, you know, this is not something you're going to be real comfortable with. You have to understand a lot of technical aspects in order to make good miniatures. And that's not just at the sculpting end. You know, you have to figure out, know how to make a quality product. And like I say, that's why I think the partnership end of this is so strong. And most of the big players out there are actually open to this. Mm-hmm. They would love to keep their machines running 24/7, and usually have a lot of knowledge that they're happy to share with you And it's another nice thing about the miniatures end of it is you can get into this in a fairly small quantity. Skirmish games, you know, requiring somewhere between 6 and 12 figures are not that uncommon in the market.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point, is that you don't have to start with, you know, 200-piece armies. You know, certainly my entry point into miniatures was Blood Bowl, and the reason I was excited about that is I only had to paint 11 guys, because at the time I was a terrible painter, and now I'm just a bad painter. But the thing here is that, you know, if you're a manufacturer and you're considering a miniatures game, or you're a group of people and you say, you know, we've really got something neat, we've tried it at a few cons and everybody loved it, You need a perfect bound book, and you need a small line of miniatures. You don't need a gigantic box set, right? You don't need to do Battle Lore, you know, or which is, I guess, more of a board game, really. But you don't need to do, you know, the Warhammer, you know, gigantic box set to launch your product.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, we've seen a number of companies who've, you know, taken tests into this. Fantasy Flight has, you know, a couple of board game, miniature game types of things. We can talk about their historical line with the Wings, you know, which is initially 12 aircraft, basically only 4 sculpts. Mm-hmm. You know, we have their other entry, which is, I'm going to misname this, Animea, I think it is, which is their anime oriented miniatures game, which is a straight up miniatures game. They only started with about, you know, skirmish game, a couple dozen pieces released in small groups. There's lots of market open to this. It just depends on how big a market you're looking for. I mean, as a niche market goes, you know, historicals are a huge niche market. They seem to always be looking for the next cool version of a Roman legionnaire, a Napoleonic line infantryman. And the interesting part of that is, unlike with like the fantasy guys who are, I need one, when they're talking guys, you know, they're looking at huge quantities of the same figure, which makes your production values pretty good.
Interesting. I had actually thought of that. You know, I always think of historical miniatures as a really small niche market and therefore not necessarily profitable. But if you can design 5 guys and, you know, take a, you know, give or take a few, but if you can design, you know, design 5 guys and then produce them ad nauseum, it really is different than selling to your AD&D market, which is bigger, but you've got to have, you know, you have to have a left-handed thief, you know.
Absolutely. With sword, without armor, male, female.
Exactly. So very different there. So again, the miniatures market, for those of you still with us after that long discussion of the miniatures market, thank you very much. It's something that, you know, Rhett and I have both, Rhett much more so than I, have both cut our teeth in the miniatures market, and it's not something we've talked about a lot on the show. We wanted to do that. Next week, though, Rhett, tell them about our next show.
Well, our next show is on March 19th, and our guest would be Rich Gottlieb. We'll be talking to him about the rise of the board games in the mass market. You know, Rich is a man with his finger on the pulse, so we're really looking forward to that one.
That's right. That's right. Rich writes a blog over at playthings.com, as well as quite frankly, being an industry fixture. He's been a consultant for years in the mass market on the toy side and on the game side. So we're going to pick Rich's brain a little bit and hope to get some of his years of expertise poured into audio format.
Ooh, I like the concept of poured.
I was going to try to say cast to tie into the miniatures theme, but poured I thought worked as well.
I like poured.
Okay, good.
Well, that's the show. I'm Rhett Kipp.
And I'm Ben Clark. We'll talk to you again March 19th. Mm-hmm.